Still to come on Counterpoint, Christine Rosen ponders why it is that we no longer seem to be embarrassed about anything. Well, lots of words to describe that. Rude, crude, vulgar, uncouth. But Michael, your next guest wants to tell the world about hyperopia. I'm all ears and clueless. What is it?
Basically, it's about seizing the moment. Now, the Romans were onto it long ago, of course. They even coined the term carpe diem. But now, an American scholar has done some studies of the subject, as American scholars like to do. Professor of Marketing at Columbia University Business School, Ran Kivitz, has coined the term hyperopia. It describes excessive farsightedness and overcontrol to the point where it may even produce profound regret. Ran Kivitz has looked into this question in relation to consumer behaviour.
What happens sometimes is that people focus too much, because it does make sense. People focus too much on the long term, kind of sacrifice too much from their present, or they're just fun in day-to-day life.
I think you've coined this word hyperopia, is that right?
In this context, I have. I mean, it's a word that obviously comes, or not obviously, comes from the medical field, from in terms of how people physically see the notion that people are farsighted. So it's a medical term, but we and I have applied it in the context of decision-making and consumer behavior.
Can you tell us, what is your argument about this sort of thing?
Well, indeed, civilization and many religions and many philosophies and myths and so on and so forth have been focused on this notion that we should focus on the future, you know, the ant and the grasshopper, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And so it feels to be the right thing to do to focus on the future, to work hard and conserve monetary wealth, to save for the future.
And I guess we're also taught to feel guilty if we don't do that.
Absolutely. People tend to feel, many of us tend to feel guilty about indulgences, about spending our own money on indulgences and so on and so forth. So what we've found, and actually research with, I would say by now, tens of thousands of consumers, with people, is that sometimes people tend to feel that they're underindulging, that they're repeatedly avoiding indulgences because of this philosophy, if you will, and that they're out of balance.
And so I suppose companies and people selling products and services can use this, can they, to try and encourage them to buy luxuries?
Yes, I think absolutely. I think first, actually, we, just us humans, people can use this to maybe strike a better balance, to maybe seek everything in moderation and somehow realize that excessive indulgence is obviously not good, but also excessive avoidance of indulgence or over-control is bad. But certainly companies, marketers of luxuries and marketers of other types of services can build on this and kind of communicate, for example, with consumers that they've earned the right to indulge, that they have, that they deserve some indulgence.
I'm reminded of the Robin Williams film, Dead Poets Society, where he urged them, you know, carpe diem, seize the day.
One of my articles, that was actually a footnote, if you will, I mean, based on that philosophy.
How would you advise a company to encourage people to avoid hyperopia, or indeed individuals?
Sure. I guess I'll start with companies, as you mentioned. There's multiple ways to do that. One way is actually using rewards. I mean, you can think about loyalty programs like frequent flyer programs and other types of reward and loyalty programs that consumers can engage in certain behaviors and then earn rewards. And so effectively the transaction is you invest a stream of effort. You need to accumulate points. You need to keep up your loyalty toward the company. And then in return, you can get rewards. Those rewards, it's highly beneficial for companies to provide luxury or indulgence rewards, and where people can work hard but not spend their own money, and in return get indulgences that they tend to have too little of. So that's one way, actually, to get people to engage in behaviors that companies want in return for luxuries that people feel that they don't have enough.
So I guess in those cases, the people feel, in a sense, they've earned them.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. When you're selling luxuries, services, or products, any sort of justification that you can find or you can bundle into the purchase will help. So some of the research I'm doing with colleagues as we kind of speak, if you will, is on the bundling of what we call functional alibi. So adding some functional feature. I mean, a classic example is a watch, you know, a designer watch that's very expensive, clearly luxury, but you have some feature there that's functional that people may not use, but kind of provide more balance and more justification for buying that watch or other luxuries.
What about a more brutal approach to the problem, if we can call it that, that comes to mind? I mean, are there any companies that are simply going out to people and saying, in effect, if you don't buy this now, you're going to feel sorry later?
So it's interesting that you ask. It's funny that you ask that question. I mean, we've done a lot of research, myself and Anat Kenan, a former student who's a professor now at Harvard Business School. We've done a lot of research on this topic itself. What happens in the long run? And what we found is that the more time that passes, people start feeling regret about not indulging enough, about being too virtuous, if you will. So immediately after a purchase or immediately after a choice, guilt is very strong. People regret vice, quote-unquote. People regret indulging. But as more time passes, it completely reverses. So long story short, we also found that if you ask people to think about the distant future, if you ask people to predict how they'll feel in the distant future, that actually can cause people to realize that in the long run they'll be happier with indulgences and actually can get them to buy more luxuries, for example.
I know somewhere you quote a line, maybe you can give it to me exactly, where I think someone said on their deathbed, no one wishes they'd spent more time in the office.
Right. There's a couple of different sources, potential sources for that statement, but I think it certainly seems very true,
yeah,
and our research actually corroborates it.
Just talking about some other research you've done briefly, Ron, have you done much work on how you can reward people and encourage positive behavior change?
Yes, certainly, and it relates a little bit to what we've discussed before,
yeah.
But I have...
What are the ways in general? How can this be done, and if so, how?
Yeah, I mean, what we've found over actually a considerable amount, a great deal of research over the last 15 years, this is with Itamar Simonson, my advisor and colleague from Stanford University, and many other folks. What we found is that incentives can be very effective in driving behavior change. This could be for consumers, customers. This could be for salespeople. This could be for motivating employees. And there's a certain amount of there's a bunch of principles that I'd be delighted to share quickly, a bunch of principles on how these reward programs and incentives actually motivate people to change their behavior, to exert more effort. So one is, for example, the notion of goals. And in fact, we've built there on research with rats from the early 20th century by one of the early behaviorists called Clark Hull, who found that his rats and the mazes that he would put for them would run faster and faster as they would approach cheese at the end of the runway. And we basically find the same finding. You know, we find it in coffee reward programs. Buy 10 coffees, get one free. I've found it with sales forces trying to sell product in order to earn a reward. I've found it in many different contexts that people accelerate their effort as they get closer to the reward. And so one of the findings that we've published is called illusionary goal progress. If people accelerate towards goals, you can make them feel like they're closer to a goal by endowing them with some credit up front, giving them some points or some sense of proximity or early achievement as they just start. In one coffee chain study that we've done, a field study, some customers would get a buy 10 coffee, get one free card, mm-hmm. and other customers randomly would get buy 12 coffees, get one free, but the first two slots on this 12-stamp card, the first two slots were already stamped.
Uh-huh.
So effectively, it's the same, you know, people assigned to both of these programs were actually required to do the same thing, buy 10 coffees, get one free, but the folks who felt that they have this head start, the folks who were endowed with the illusionary goal progress, the first two stamps on their 12-stamp card was already stamped, they completed the coffee card 3 days faster, about 13 days as opposed to 16. They were much more motivated to participate in the program because they felt closer to the goal. We've applied this with sales forces. Colleagues have done similar types of studies with car washes. We've done it in the context of pizzerias and many different behaviors. So if you're trying to motivate people with an incentive system to drop their alcohol consumption, if you're trying to motivate people to study harder, those are instances where you have clear goals, where you can provide rewards, and providing a sort of a head start or a feeling that I'm on my way for achievement, I think could be very, very helpful.
Ron Kivitz is a professor of marketing at Columbia University Business School.